you know, the oil industry in Western North Dakota has developed to a great extent. And,
do you know that there's more organized labor now in Dakota than there are farmers?
That's what I was told.
It's amazing. No one, the farmers won't admit it. It's changed the world.
I remember when Langer was going to be impeached years ago.
Yeah.
When he was governor. You know, in Bismarck, they had a central labor union. So they had guys, you know, hire some of the delegates to the central labor union to create a riot in Bismarck so that Langer could declare an emergency. So they couldn't impeach him, you know, in the race. Did you ever know that? Well, that you should investigate too and find out the details of that. They paid him $1 apiece to go down the cattle. Pat should be able to give some information on that because he was very close to some of the labor leaders of Bismarck.
Oh, I never heard of that. That's funny.
Yeah, you see, Langer was going to be impeached and he was going to lose his governorship and he couldn't afford to lose it at the time, so he had the grapevine went down there to the Central Labor Union, and the guys went down there and they created a riot in Bismarck.
Did it work?
Oh yeah, he was never impeached.
That's a wonderful story. If you don't write some of these things down, you know, history is going to take its revenge upon you. I think it's a responsibility to.
Oh, well, it is.
Express it. I mean, it really is. You know,
what?
On March 4th, what is the big demonstration?
March 5th.
March 5th.
That's the next one, March.
Yeah, that was the previous day.
Was he going to, we expected in the end of February. Walter was in Upper Michigan at the time, and well, we made all arrangements at the hospital, so he was called to be one of the speakers in Duluth. So I got left to my mother's, and I had the baby, and then I was about a month old before Walter thought. So that was March 5th.
Yeah, the demonstration was on the previous day, though.
I had a long, grumpy old doctor clock, and then he'd come in there and say, "Hasn't your husband home yet?" Now, he was the most, I got along with everybody else but the doctor.
Ah, come on.
Yeah, because you know that it's not moving along.
I've always been a little bit afraid, you know, when you start anything and yeah.
during the time of the administration of Mayor Snyder. And we took the budget of the city of Duluth and we showed them where the money could be gotten for relief. And the city council, you know, or Mayor Snyder, it was preposterous that we should ask for anything. And when I got through reading the resolution to the city council,
he got up and he says, young man, he says, do you know how much $1 million is? And he says, where did you get the authority to come here and ask for anything so preposterous as that? $1 million is so much money that you just know nothing about it. So I told him to come down the window and showed him the paper down there, you know, Courthouse Square, that they sent me out here and he went out and adjourned the meeting, you know. And then, of course, they started getting about seats in the council chamber, speaking, you know, these workers. And there was a certain set of demands. As a matter of fact, that was public, by the way. They even sent me clippings from Finland, from the Finnish newspaper, that there was a man by the name of Harju, you know, that demanded $1 million from the city of Finland.
Yeah.
she can talk Finn with him. He's the only Finn. I said, well, I don't think Mother is like any of them. I mean, she, but naturally, it's more common, you know, when you can talk.
Is your mother still alive?
Yeah.
Where does she live?
South Range, Michigan.
Oh.
And near.
She is a sparkler. I have a real mother-in-law, too. The czars of Russia, you know, were very kind.
developed further in and finally resulted in the labor movement. And, you know, in 1905, you know, had a tremendous effect on the Finnish people. And that is, they saw the possibility, for instance, of independence from Russia, and at the same time, you know, they gave a boost, you know, to the labor movement, because it was...
Women's suffrage in Finland, ever since they've had suffrage, you know, men and women voted there.
Well, so, they got together then.
Yes.
Well, that counts, right?
Yeah, of course, that was late, though. That was, you know, after the First World War, it seems, because there never was a, you know, the women had a franchise there, always.
Now, will you tell us something about, you were telling, you started last night about
been able to be free of mortgages.
And anybody that had mortgages, regardless of what the amount was, unless they had enough mortgage on their land, so if the bankers put out that they couldn't afford to take the land over, and the farmer quit paying his penance, you know, to the bankers. So those farmers that had a lot of debts, you know, way beyond their resources, you see, they were able to keep their places because the bankers, of course, couldn't take over they owed them more than their farms were worth. But this struggle of the farmers, you know, at that time was, you know, in its heyday in North Dakota. And when the Gaulke eviction was to take place, and I was there then at Twite's, I stayed there at Twite's, and Twite was involved in the Holiday Association, and then they had the United Farmers League from Frederick, South Dakota, and all of these, and we stopped, you see, they were going to throw Gaulke. They had already, of course, foreclosed on his land, but they were going to throw this man who had built a huge farm there within 30 years, you know, and they were going to throw him out of his place and take his furniture off, you know, they were going to compel him to move. So the sheriff come down there, you know, and it was announced that he had a trailer in the back of his car, and his deputy, you know, they're going to take the furniture and throw them on the roads. That's what they done to get them off the farm. You know, they were put on the county road, and then the farmer would have to go out and find a place to stay after that. Well, when he come down to Gaulke's, you see, there was the United Farmers League from Frederick and the Holiday Association, and all of us was in the house, and we put in a lot of coal in the great big pot-bellied stove. We were sitting there, and Whalen was the sheriff at the time. And of course, at the same time, you know, the land, you know, were also sold in front of the courthouses, you know. And Whalen himself had his farm mortgaged, and he was going to lose it they were going to have a sale. And when he came down to Gaulke's, why, we determined beforehand that we were not going to let him take any of the furniture that was, we were going to sit on it, and he'd have to carry all the farmers out, and all the people. So he saw that immediately when he came there. Of course, I don't think he intended even to evict him. You know, he liked that business, you know. First of all, I don't think he liked to go out and throw the furniture out, because there was quite a bit of it. And he didn't bring it out to men, you know, just one deputy. And a little trailer in the back of his car, you know, but it was to show that he was carrying out his duty. So he asked us if we would permit him to read this document. You know, he got to the middle of the floor, and he read this, whereas, you know, the foreclosure and the eviction. And he told us, you know, aside there, that he had to do that, because otherwise, see, he had to put up a bond when he's sheriff, that he carries out, you know, there's no losses. And he says, otherwise he'd have to forfeit his bond, he has to recite that. So we let him read that, and then he asked us what we were going to do about it. He told him, you're not going to take anything out of here. So I said, thank you. He said, that's all. And then when he got outside, he says, boy, now that this is over with, he said, my farm is going to be sold on a certain day. I wasn't there at that sale, but they prevented his foreclosure sale too. And this here, of course, it was a good thing. You see, not only the farmers were but you see, the authorities even, they had to, because the whole basis of society was collapsing. You know, they had to, who could they be in sympathy with? They couldn't surely be in sympathy with the Federal Land Bank, you know, that was taking these farms away from them, you know, on which the little towns depended even. And then there was the other, right immediately after that, you know, the Holiday Association heard that, by the way, Louis Twite was a county commissioner, so he was notified that a man, not far from Twite's place, was going to be thrown out of his house. He was a tenant. He had been renting for a number of years from this. He was a preacher from Oaks, North Dakota, that owned this place. And
place to move. So what happened was that this preacher went out and took the furniture while this man was gone, visiting somewhere. You know, he took the furniture out of his house and put it in an empty house. About a quarter of a mile from there, you know, just piled it up in there and then put padlocks on the doors. Well, I and another guy, we went out and we took and tore off the padlocks and we took the furniture and put them back into the house. Man can't be evicted. That's what the Holiday Association told us to do that. And of course that was going to result in a lawsuit in our arrest and so on. So the county attorney there had warrants for us.
The preacher got out the warrants?
Yeah, we were to be arrested. But the warrants were never served by the county attorney. And he told me, he said, well, he says, when you come home, you just go put it on the street. He says, I got these pocket in these burners. So I wasn't, of course, they would have been done a terrible thing if I would have been arrested in my hometown, where, for instance, already at that time, you know, I had secured for myself a good reputation as a young man, you know, around about the town, you know, they arrested me. Recorded in the history of Minnesota because he was
himself, you know. He'd go out to a community of strangers. He'd organize, put out a leaflet and organize a meeting. And farmers would come down there, and then he'd even land in jail. But the farmers would go out and take him out, and nobody had to worry about him. Because this was so. They took care of him. He could go anywhere. He was that kind of a person. And he was also one of those people who, in an assignment, you see, he never failed. You know, where Reno said that he would go, he would appear there. You know, without question, it was, you could just know that just as sure as the sun rises, he will be there in the where he was supposed to be. And this Park Rapids business came about in the following manner. You know, I was at this farmer's meeting in Minneapolis, you know, where we were discussing the question of demands to be made from the government, you know, Floyd Oakes administration, as to what we needed some relief for farmers, because they're not only they themselves were getting ragged and starving, but their cattle began to die, their horses. And this Park Rapids business came up there, and Reno, you know, was assigned to go down there and investigate what was really happening, because they said that cattle were actually starving to death because of lack of hay and fodder. And of course, Reno disappeared even before the meeting. You know, he said he would go, and before the meeting was over, he was gone. Nobody knew where he was, where he went. So what the result of that was that because we didn't know whether he was going to go there or not, I was, you know, I had to go to New York Mills, by the way, on a trip to the co-op. So I was assigned to go to Park Rapids also and see what we can do, and see what was happening there, just that way. And we had an appointment, and by the way, Jimmy Fowler was in Minneapolis yet, you know, he was to go, I think he went with me at the time. And we got to Park Rapids, and there was a meeting had been called for the courthouse. And the farmers started coming to the courthouse ragged, you know, they had patched pants and the old coach, you know, and you know, there were hundreds of them. They came to the courthouse and they had gotten the courtroom out there for and they came down there to discuss what to do. And it was a result of Reno's organization, you know. He had gone there, and he appeared there with just like that, you know, in that courthouse, you know. He knew some of those guys, and they had a tremendous meeting there. And you know, they sent wires to Floyd Olson, by the way, from there, and they made a demand to Floyd Olson that if they didn't get food for their family, they never said anything about their own food. Or they're home, right? But you know, they had a resolution describing the and telegram describing how many cattle and horses were going to die if they didn't get fodder. And I forget what they actually made a threat of some kind to Olson that if it didn't take place, you know, they were going to take things. Oh yes, they told them in this telegram, you know, the government had already stacked some fodder in those big centers, you know. And in this telegram, they told Floyd Olson that if there wasn't any response in a certain time, they were going to take things into their own hands.
Josh have known? What happened to that?
I had some marvelous pictures. I had, Minneapolis, I had a picture where 35,000 people were around the courthouse in Minneapolis in an unemployed demonstration.
You took movies?
I took movie pictures.
I didn't know that. That would be a wonderful film to put together.
And I had pictures taken by Arvo Hussoff in North Dakota, where the United States Marshals had rifles, and a badge. And they were sitting on a bank, where they were taking bulldozers and dug out a pit, where they were shooting cows. And they were starving to death. United States Marshals.
And you took movies of that?
Arvo Hussoff, we had that in that struggle for social security and relief,
Where do you suppose that all is?
I think the film is destroyed outside of the one that was sent to the Soviet Union.
Bill Larmy,
after they started on those circuits, after I left there, you see, they caught up these things and then they used parts of them and they
somebody didn't. Must have. Those would be invaluable, wouldn't they? I didn't know that anybody ever took movies of those.
There's a book, by the way, written by a Trotskyite, where they have a picture of me taking movies.
Is that Walker's book on Minneapolis?
Yeah, it has a picture of me taking
American movies. City?
It may be, I don't
think it's the title. There is one of you in there.
Yeah, there
that's
is.
That's a good book, anyway, except for its deification of the Dens, that American City.
I know it has a picture of me taking movie pictures.
Well, Ross might know something about it.
Bill Lowry of Phelps, Wisconsin, he's a manager of the Co-op there.
Yeah, but I don't think that there's any of the film left, because I asked him, when I was...
If he moved to Minneapolis, he was right there.
I asked Mike Vestiva, from the TMS, said that those films were all destroyed, that they were burnt.
2 years ago, we saw him.
Yeah.
They were burnt up.
Yeah, they were, let dry, and then they were unrolled.
It's uncared for, that's all.
Yeah, and, there were 1,200 feet of film of taken all over the, by the way, when the guys went to farmers' conferences in Iowa and Nebraska, they have pictures of those.
Was there only one print of them?
Well, there were several prints made, but like Garrison in New York, they made a print of it and they sent it to the Soviet Union. The Garrison.
Would they preserve these many years? We've been here 15. And
no, I don't think they. I think
25.
You may find little pieces.
But we can find it in the Soviet Union.
Isn't that a problem?
Yeah, well, that's possible.
Do you know where he sent it to the Soviet Union?
I think it was sent to Korea.
I bet you they preserve it.
That's possible that they have it there, but Mike Vestiva said that all of that Unity Alliance material, all of it, there was a lot of material that I gathered there. When they liquidated Rudolph and those people liquidated the Alliance, this left-wing cooperative organization, they just took all the material and they just dumped it into barrels and burned it up there's one thing that I resented very much is the question of destroying the minutes of this alliance, which I kept. I was the executive officer of this alliance, and the minutes reflected the true nature of the struggle in the Central Cooperative. Also, you remember the left-wing and right-wing fighting there, which isn't at all what the newspaper said it was. If they would have followed, instead of course, we, and the mistakes that we made, are a part of the whole thing, that is, we were infantile in the whole thing, but the basic thing, that resulted in the split in the co-ops would have been the largest consumers cooperative movement in the world, if they would have followed what our basic intention was. That is, if they would have actually push the cooperative movement from the Central Cooperative Wholesale into the United Auto Workers and gotten it in connection with the trade unions. They would have become something like the English co-ops. And then, of course, during the Second World War, they would have become the largest distributors of goods in this country, without question. But that's one of the places where history, was because
See, this is literally, there's no miracle about it, but you know, where they're really successful, like in Finland, Denmark, Sweden, England, you know, they are a part of the trade union movement. That is, the co-op members are members of trade unions. They are people who have nothing to lose but their chance in the world of the win, according to Karl Marx. And consequently, they are loyal to these institutions on the basis of needing them. You see, John D. Rockefeller doesn't need co-ops. He can get his, even if the prices were, regardless of what they are. See, the trade unionists are the ones that need this kind of an institution most, and the fault of the American cooperative movement always has been that it's been a movement that has, even though it started among labor, you see, it's always then finally got into a business institution, and they've even been, either been destroyed by competition, or they have become
big business institutions in themselves. And it didn't mean anything at all. Business institutions as is, you know, like the Central Public Wholesale now, you see, it just can't get any farther because there are other business institutions that are as efficient and much more efficient than they are. And the menace, you see, of this alliance, you see, that was organized was invaluable because it had the record of what was done, really, and what the basic issue was. It wasn't that it was Harjo in there or that it was Holloman, but it was actually a question, for instance, of principle. That is, following the original principle of the founders of the Central Glory Wholesale, or going to the right, and they went to the right, you know, and consequently retarded the whole movement.
Where did you first know Tapala?
Oh, I met him first at a co-op meeting when he was a boy.
Boy.
Yeah. He was a tousle-haired, blonde boy, you know, had his hair, you know, was hanging over his eyes, and it was at a creamery meeting. And the first impression that I had of him was they had a very serious discussion in this meeting. I forget exactly the issue, but this boy got up. You know, in a simple way, you see, he gave his speech, you know. He was a delegate to this creamery meeting in Virginia. And he got up to that meeting and he made a little speech, which was quite impressive because it actually changed the whole thing. And it was very simple. He had a very simple philosophy with regard to the co-ops, but that's the first time, you know, that I knew of him. Of course, then later, you see, throughout the farm movement, in the co-ops, and in the labor movement, in the unemployed movement, you see, I was very close to Renko, and you know, he was, you know, all people have fears. I imagine he did too. But he was one of those people who impressed me that you know, a thing that had to be done, you see, he was absolutely fearless. You know, he didn't, no one could bulldoze him or intimidate him, you know, when he had something that he thought should be, you know, it didn't matter how big or small or what kind of a crowd or anything, you see, he anything he had on his chest, you see, he put it over, whether it was accepted or rejected, you see, he was someone, for instance, who it's great to
he's kind of in the rear, you know, and they were finally caught by the fascists and destroyed.
I didn't know that. It seems to me that Kyle Ross.
Reyno was killed in the retreat of the Embro. The detail that is known by Kenny, my brother.
She who was also in the retreat of the
Embro. Oh, he was? Or did he get into the act?
Yeah.
Are there any pictures of him that somebody has? Down
below? Oh, I think there's quite a few pictures. There's, you see, this Dantilo was a different kind of a person than he was a person who radiated that brings confidence, and his activity, which is in the farm movement, is unique in no one ever done what he done. See, he worked independently when there was a need for independence. And he knew how to work. You know, like in Carlton, they arrested him down there.
Carlton, Minnesota?
Yeah, and so he went down there and had a meeting, and they arrested him in Carlton, you know, for leading a demonstration. And the farmers, however, they went out and took him out. And strangers. And
the farmers, yeah,
sure, they took him out. And they ran out of Carlton. You know, he didn't think that he... She said, well, even this, you know, I was there in jail for a year and a day, but they come out and they got me out, and I'm here now, okay.
Jimmy Flower on that.
And Jimmy Flower's dad, also.
Great on that farm.
Oh.
Farm. Organization.
Did you see him when you were back there,
Jimmy?
Oh, well, no.
I thought he was a taxi.
Yeah, I've been wanting to go and talk to him, too. Did you know Tassel?
Yeah.
What are your memories of him?
Well, all the time, including you,
Superior, all the
folks,
all the friends.
First, I was involved in somebody who made this business, you know, always in the kitchen and going on. And then Vince was middle, and so Walter was on the call.
I don't remember.
He taught at the various classes in the, that is, in the, even as a teacher, you know, he was practical, you know, with regard to the activities among the farmers. You see, he was a farm organizer,
you remember the struggles they went through when they rolled the rails and with tonic line. Mm-hmm. They had to make these meetings and there was no car available, so they rolled them.
Yeah, and sometimes they, like that one time in Michigan, or in Minnesota, where they went to this meeting and they had Jack Anderson's car and the train run over them, you know, and up to like house to the meeting, and he said, this is one of the marvelous meetings we had. The car had been just twisted and they both escaped from there. Train ran over. Afterwards, he said, well, we had an accident, you know, that the car was twisted on. Jack, I had told Jack about it.
How did they get out of it?
And
Jimmy Flowers was like, too, when he had all these small children coming in.
Yeah.
His wife, really, she's a marvelous person, but she...
I tell you, there ought to be a story of all the wives.
Oh.
Like Ellen and you and...
Well, Vi Flowers, I'm telling you, she lived over there at the Monaga Hall, or Sabika Hall, you know, in the room, cold place with those little children.
She had four or five, didn't
she? Well, they're grown up and she's living in Astoria, Oregon. But she really, I always admired Vi for her. I mean, she was so steadfast. Too bad that they had to separate the way they did.
Oh, did they?
Their life would have been really, I mean.
Say, will you put down here Pat Barrett's address?
I don't have it. I'll have to, I can't remember the name of that. It's just the name of the
town. I think we should, correspond between you.
I think so, too.
Just to...
I was wondering if you wouldn't like to, I'm going up there in November. If you wouldn't like to talk, to say a few words into the tape directly to Pat. I mean, he would certainly... I didn't really know. He never mentioned you, and I didn't, just didn't come up. I didn't know you were so...
One thing you want to tell Pat, for instance, that he, I sure would like to see him, and the...
But why did you know?
He's in the... Well, I don't know...
But you could say, if you wish, you know, we'll all go on. You can just talk to him.
No,
it's wonderful to play that, too. I wish that I'd known that you knew him, I would have had him do the same to you. Oh, it would cheer him up so much.